I do feel like running for me too is like the guardrails on my life.
Yes, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, I think some people experience this, like when they start seeing a therapist and they've never seen a therapist in their whole life, and they find a good therapist and they see them or talk to them weekly, and they're like, how did I live life without having this therapist in my life? It's kind of a similar thing with running. And I think when you step away from it for an extended period of time and then you come back to it and you realize like, oh, wow, yeah, that was quite different life that I was living. Yo.
Hi, welcome to the B-Rad podcast. I'm your host, Kat. Carson is in the other room. We're doing a virtual recording today and he is sick, so he's quarantining. So it's just me today. Today, we're recording with Matt Daniels, who has been a longtime friend of mine. I've been following his career since 2015, 2016. We kind of came onto the scene together and were teammates under the Solomon Ambassador team. And as this podcast evolves, I am wanting to learn from other athletes to figure out how I can unlock the best version of myself, you know, and I'm really interested in talking to Matt because he's had that same trajectory as me with like super high highs and super low lows. This weekend, he is racing the Canyons 100K. This podcast will come out on Friday and he is racing on Saturday. So I'm super excited to hear what's changed for him this year. He's been on a tear. He just parted with longtime sponsor Nike, and he seems to be really running for himself, and the results are proving it. So tune in to listen to this episode with Matt Daniels, and thanks to our sponsor, Delta G. I've been taking Delta G every day religiously lately. I've been going for my run, coming back, making second breakfast, and then taking Delta G right before I go onto my long day of meetings. And I've been, as usual, noticing a huge difference in how I engage with my work. But the other thing is I'm testing it out for immunity. As I mentioned, Carson is sick, and while he's quarantining and we're being super careful, I've also been taking Delta G religiously to try and bolster my immune system. Use code BRAD20 for 20% off, and check out the link in your bio for to find out which ketones work for you. All right, enjoy the episode. Hey, man. Hey, and welcome to the B-Rad podcast. I am your host, Kat, and today I have a longtime friend, and I've been a fan of him for a long time, Matt Daniels. Sub-4-minute miler is probably the thing that gets attached to his name the most, even though he's been dominating the trail scene in the last couple of years with top 10 finish at Western, you know, too many podiums to count. And you know, I love following your career because you have the ups and downs, you know, and it's similar to myself. You know, I feel like in the last couple of years, we've had a similar trajectory of super high highs and just crazy low lows.
Yeah, we have. It's so good to see you. We miss you here in Boulder. So it's so good to see you, Kat. But yeah, you're right. Lots of highs, lots of lows. I think that's just what comes with ultra running. So yeah.
I think you're right. This is something that I like to ask all of my athletes, or all of my podcast guests and my athletes too, I guess, that I coach. But, you know, I just described you from what, you know, your friends and fans know from just the running part of you. Like, but how do you describe yourself?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been asked this question before, and it's kind of funny because a lot of my identity is wrapped around running. I mean, it's just... that's just what it is, you know? And I think that I can catch a little bit of flack for saying that, but, you know, outside of that, you know, I'm a husband, I'm, you know, in a committed relationship. I'm, you know, live in Boulder, love the outdoors. You know, I'm a coach. There's a lot of things that, I guess I bring to the world, but, probably, you know, the one thing that I identify most with and that I like really leaning into is being a lifelong runner. I mean, I've been doing it since I was 11, and it's just something I get so much joy out of. And it doesn't even have to be the racing part of it and the ups and downs that come with that. It's just getting out the door every day, and each run, it's something new. You know, it's not exactly like brushing your teeth, where you know it's the same thing. It's every run you go on, there's something new. You feel different. You have different thoughts. It's a good time to kind of like be out there by myself and meditate a little bit. I've been trying to be a little bit more mindful in all aspects of life. And I think running has helped a lot with that too. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot of things.
Yeah, totally. I really like that. As someone who also, I, you know, pretty much running is like part of who I am, and it always will be. Even if I couldn't run for the rest of my life, it would be a part of my identity. And I don't think you should catch flack for that, even though I know there's like a bunch of buzz right now about being multidimensional. And I think you can still have running be such a huge part of your identity and own that and still be multidimensional.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think once I kind of realized that and stopped trying to like force myself to be, I have other interests, but when I started, like, for a while, I was like, okay, like running can't be everything in life. Like I joined the Navy and I was like, I'm just going to be a lifetime, like, you know, Navy guy and be on a boat the rest of my life and lean into that. And then it's just like, I just found myself wanting to run. And I was, once I realized that, I was like, that's what I am. That's what I do. And it's okay for most things in life to revolve around that. Doesn't mean you know, I can neglect other things, but yeah, it's been a lot more enjoyable since being able to come to that realization.
Yeah. Did you join the Navy as an attempt to bring balance from your life to running?
Yeah, I did. Definitely. I kind of went through a time. It was like I tore my hamstring and running, you know, when you're injured, your relationship with running tends to not be the greatest. And I thought I was at a point in my career where I had like achieved everything I wanted to achieve. And I was like, I can still run, but I need a little bit of balance in life. I didn't want to just, you know, get a job and join the workforce like a normal person. I wanted to travel the world and do something that was a little bit more like, felt like it was pretty important. And I felt like at the time, you know, our country was at war. I was really wanting to travel a little bit more and get some experience out of life, and figured out I would join the Navy and kind of go all in with that. You know, that's part of my issue is I'm all in on things.
Just going to say, this is a very classic ultra runner move. Like, I needed balance in my life, so I'm going to join the Navy and go all in that. I can't be all in and running, so I'm going to do the complete, you know, not opposite extreme, but pivot completely and put all my eggs in a completely different basket. That's when people talk about finding balance, it's usually, you know, they pick up knitting.
That's
hilarious.
So I think though that having that life experience was really good, and maybe it did bring a little bit of balance, you know, for that time in my life. But at the same time, you know, I missed the day-to-day training and thinking about running all the time, and I also started to pick up bad habits while I wasn't running, like things that showed me like maybe who I would actually be as a person without the sport of running. Like I started smoking a lot. I was drinking a lot. I was going out, you know, not sleeping, just really unhealthy. And, you know, part of that could have been the time of my life, you know, the age I was and that sort of thing. But it showed me, you know, the person that I have, like I could have been without running. And that was a little bit scary.
Yeah. You know, what's so funny is like, I've spent a lot of the last several years injured. And while I didn't start smoking, I realized that I, you know, was drinking way more. And I was like, all of a sudden, all my meals were like frozen meals, and I didn't really care about what I was putting in my body. And it is like, I do feel like running for me too is like the guardrails on my life.
Yes, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, I think some people experience this, like when they start seeing a therapist and they've never seen a therapist in their whole life, and they find a good therapist and they see them or talk to them weekly, and they're like, how did I live life without having this therapist in my life? It's kind of a similar thing with running. And I think when you step away from it for an extended period of time and then you come back to it and you realize like, oh, wow, yeah, that was quite different life that I was living. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I actually had totally forgotten that you joined the Navy, but I kind of want to rewind, and I'm sorry if you've talked about this other podcast, but I kind of want to bring it into who you are now. I want to get a little bit of insight on your early running days. You know, you said you started running at 11. Like, what did that look like? And, you know, for me, you know, I find it really interesting for a lot of people who, you know, they were good at running young, because for me personally, the love of running almost came second to being really good at something, you know, and falling in love with that. And I think that's a blessing and a curse for young athletes. And I kind of want to hear your perspective on that and how that might have shaped you and you know, how you might fall back on some of those tendencies that you maybe learned when you were a young athlete?
Man, you were spot on with your experience. Like that, honestly, I guess I haven't really talked much about this openly, but it is something I found that I was really good at. And I think when you're young and you're good at something, you tend to just do it because you're trying to fit in. You're trying to have people notice you, or like, you know, it's exciting. Like all of a sudden you're getting attention that you never got before. And that started actually probably before I was even 11, when I started running more full time or whatever, in like second grade, in field day. I remember being in PE class and like we had field day signups, and I had no clue what to sign up for. I was like, I'm terrible at everything except for playing baseball. Like, what am I supposed to do? Like the softball throw? No, I probably weighed like 45 pounds and, you know, I'm not going to win the softball throw. And so I asked my, my gym teacher, I was like, what event should I sign up for? And she was like, you should do the distance run because you have long legs. And I was like, okay, sweet. So I signed up for the distance run, and the distance run was the last event, of the day in field day every year. And you had field day at the end of the school year, every year in the springtime, you know, and every homeroom gets to compete against each other and that sort of thing. And so the only event I was signed up for, I think I was signed up for the three-legged race, and I had a partner in that. That was just like, or two-legged race, whatever you want to call it. And it was just not like, I think we got dead last, and I was like, kind of like pouting around, whatever. I was in second grade. And then it's like, okay, well, I have this last race, the distance run, and I went out and I won, and won by a whole lot. And all it was probably at the time, like a lap around the track, you know, that was long for a second grader or whatever. And so, yeah, I won. And then every year, when field day came, it was like, oh, you're going to sign up for the distance run again, because it was the last event. It was like, whoever wins this, that homeroom, like, you know, the points, it's like, they're going to win or whatever. And we won as a homeroom, and it was exciting. And so third grade comes along, sign up for the distance run. One fourth grade, same thing. And then you graduate elementary school and you go into junior high school, and it's like, okay, my junior high didn't have baseball, and that was all I played baseball since I was three. And so it was another thing, like, well, what sports do I do? I gotta fit in somehow. And I guess, you know, I'm good at running. And so I signed up for cross country and track for junior high school. And that summer, before going into junior high, I had a friend that got me into doing summer track, and I was going to do that to kind of get ready for junior high cross country, and found a lot of success there. And I ran, I think, my first mile ever that summer, and I remember I ran 5:09, and this guy from the stands came down to me and was like, you know, son, I don't know what, if you play any other sports or anything, but you need to focus on this running thing, because not many 11-year-olds run 5:09 for the mile. And right then it was just like light bulb went off, and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. This is who I am. And really just devoted my entire life to it. And it was only because I was told I was good at it. So I think so much of these sort of things is all about, like, just like when you're good at something, leaning into it. And the more success I had, the more enjoyment I got out of it, and the more I found out how much I did enjoy running. But I'd be lying if I said since I was 11 that every time I go out for a run and every race I run, I enjoy it. I mean, there's plenty of times where I'm just like beating my head against the wall, and I'm wondering, why did I ever do this? And have the feeling like I can't quit, because this is me. This is what I'm so good at. And then when you sit back and step back from it a little bit, you realize like, oh, I don't really want to quit. It's just a struggle in the moment, and, you know, you get through it. But yeah, I think that early success when I got started, is probably the driving force of like why I'm still doing it and why I love it so much. And of course, like going through junior high school and high school, you know, I continued to get better and got to start traveling, which I thought was really cool. You know, nobody in my family really traveled, and just live in Texas and go about your day-to-day life. And all of a sudden I was traveling, you know, across the country for these races. And then of course later getting to go all around the world doing it. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of the story of how it kind of began and is why I'm where I'm at currently.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, super similar story for me. I wasn't quite 11, but I had, you know, the guy who's our high school track was named after, I forget his name right now. It's Dan something. Carson probably remembers. He like came up to me after track meet, and he was like, you have no idea how good you could be. and I was like an 800 and I ran like a 209 as a sophomore. And I remember being just like, and at that point I was like kind of resistant to it. And then finding out that like, oh, I could be good. It just made me fall in love with it, which I think was later, maybe a curse, because it's when I all of a sudden was looking at an athlete, myself, and not being where I wanted to be, I feel like I had to separate those external motivating factors from like the internal and my why. Like my why for a long time was almost because I was good.
Yes, totally. And that's it's hard. I've sat around thinking about this a lot. When, there was a few pre-pandemic, the big question was, what is your why? Like, everybody's like, why do you do this? Why? And I was like, I've never thought about it. I just do it because I'm good at it. Like, I do love it. But like, I don't, there was no why for me to get into this other than this is something I'm good
Being
at and this
good.
is what I'm going to make my
Yeah.
craft. And yeah, I think you're exactly right. That can be a blessing and a curse for sure.
Yeah. So I was kind of thinking about talking about this later, but I think this is a good segue. I've just been looking at photos of you lately. And there's two things that's happening. Like first, after a couple years of inconsistency, you have just been crushing the last couple, finishing every race you start on the podium, if not winning every single race you start. But the thing that's been most obvious to me is every picture that I see of you, and I've known you for years, so like I've seen you through lots of ups and downs, like, but every time I have seen a photo from you since the beginning of 2024, it like joy has just come through the photo, even from thousands of miles away in Hawaii, and I see it and I'm like, man, I've never seen Matt that happy.
Well, thanks.
It's really amazing, and it seems like kind of like you just turned a page and you're a different Matt. And can you talk a little bit about that, and what has been the change for you, and what new energy are you bringing forward to bring this joy to your running?
Yeah, it's gosh, how much time do we have? I think it's a accumulation of a few different things. I think starting off, yeah, the last 2 years, or really almost 3 years, were really, really rough. Not because of the pandemic, but I had a pretty serious injury that like I just couldn't shake, and still to this day, it still bothers me. But it's not, I'm able to run just fine now. But it was something that was I thought my career was going to end. And it was just like always in my head, always bothering me. And
What
at
was
this,
it?
so I had bursitis in my heel, got a cortisone shot, and it somehow got infected, but I didn't know this. And I just had a lot of pain there. And then I went in for surgery to get the bursa removed. And when they opened me up, they saw that I had a really bad staph and MRSA infection in my heel. And it had my Achilles was torn, the bursa was completely like disintegrated essentially, and then I had that staph infection that was just eating away at the tissue and the bone of my heel. And so, long story short, the surgery didn't fix it, and I kept having relapses of staph for about a year and a half, and I had to go in and get IV antibiotics every day for like a few months for it to finally go away, like really strong antibiotics. And those antibiotics did not make me feel good or like training or
Yeah.
running at all. So, yeah, it was just a process that was just really hard. It was really difficult to work through. And at the same time, you had the pandemic's going on. I had built my coaching business up to like just crazy stupid numbers because I was worried my, running was going to end and I needed something to fall back on. And I was just extremely busy with that and, wasn't really focusing on myself at all. And even last year when I was starting to feel healthy and racing again, like just the focus wasn't on me at all. And I think in this sport, if you're not giving yourself a little bit of grace and love, then you're not going to run well. It's a little bit of a selfish sport, and that's fine. You can be there for other people, but at the end of the day, it's just you running on the trails. And if you're not, showing up for yourself, it's going to be a disaster. And so, fast forward to December 2023, I thought I was going to be getting re-signed by Nike, like we talked about it and everything. And at the end of the day, like the numbers just weren't right. And then offers were retracted and ended up, long story short, not signing with them, but it was too late to sign with any other company. And so I was just like, okay, like I'm not sponsored anymore. Like I guess I'm a professional runner. I'm still running at a high level, but there's no pressure or responsibility right now. Like I'm just running in a blank shirt, you know? And that realization, like, I was just like, okay, like, do I continue doing this? And I immediately came to the conclusion, like, yes, I do. And that to me told me that, okay, then I'm doing it completely for myself and nobody else. And that like took a lot of weight off my shoulders, I think. And it was just the timing of it, really. Like it's great having a sponsorship. And I would love to get back to that point to where I'm running for a company and feel supported and that sort of thing. But, I think early in this year, it was really good for me to like have that freedom, and to realize why I, you know, come back to why I really do this. And that is because I enjoy it and I would be doing it regardless if I'm making money or not doing it. And so, that was huge. And, that was kind of like the unlock to getting the ball rolling this year. And then, it's just kind of built, you know, upon that, like it's kind of snowballed where, once I had that realization, I was like, you know, where else in life can I like have this sort of unlock and relieve a little bit of weight and pressure. And I started like looking at a lot of things like, you know, my relationships or my relationship with friends and, how I was, you know, I'm kind of a yes man. I say yes to literally everything that I'm asked to do. And part of it was like, okay, how can I like figure out how to say no, like to things. Like I started seeing a therapist, working through some past traumas that I had when I was in the Navy and growing up in life and things like that. And so just, I've really unloaded a lot of things the last 4 months. And I think that just having that weight off my shoulders has allowed me to run a little bit more freely and enjoy it. And I'm starting to feel a little bit like I did, you know, like when I first got into trail running where, you know, this is so new and it's fun and it's refreshing. And it's been good.
Yeah, that's so cool. I'm loving talking to you because it's giving me so much hope. Like I've been going through a very similar thing as you. I had, you know, my hip surgery last year, but that hip surgery was like two and a half years overdue. Yeah. And then after that, like, I just found myself going crazy and doing like too much stuff, being a yes man, saying yes to everything, desperately trying to hold on to my contract. And, yes, you know, this year it's been like a lot of like, okay, I'm going to do things more intentionally. And it's hard. And I get in the, like I actually decided to not race canyons just because I was like, okay, I'm rushing this block and I'm not as fit as I want to be in the next race that I do. I want to show up at fit. And I actually, funny, I just started therapy too. And it's like crazy. Yeah. And Carson has been urging me to go forever. And I start, and it takes a while to actually just nut up and go, you know, and it's super intimidating. And like, you know, it's clear that you have offloaded a lot, you know, you look light and happy, in every single photo I've seen of you. And it's just, you know, it's been really inspiring.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah. I think, it's a process, right? Like everybody goes, I think a lot of runners go through this in some form or fashion in their running careers, if they're lucky to, you know, have multiple years in their running career, like we have. And, it's something that like, it's not fully talked about. There may be a post on Instagram where somebody's like, you know, I'm feeling good. Like, I mean, I've written blog posts, which that's another thing that's helped me is writing. I really enjoy writing. I have a hard time expressing sometimes with my words what I'm actually feeling and thinking. And so writing has helped a lot. But I think having these conversations with people, like, you know, whether it's through our podcasts or out on a run or whatever, is it's super helpful. Because a lot of times at the elite level, especially for us, it's not, you know, it's not talked about. You don't want to like tell people, oh, I'm really struggling right now. It's like, no, I still got to line up and race these guys and girls. And so it's like, you know, I think it does help though to get through it and know that there is light at the end of all this. It's just, it takes work and takes a little bit of time, which is the hard part.
Yeah. And I think even admitting to yourself that you're struggling is really hard. I think like in this sport, we get so comfortable with being uncomfortable, and that bleeds into our everyday life. And so it's hard to like not only admit to yourself, but to just to realize like, oh, this is an unhealthy amount of discomfort that I'm just living in my day-to-day life, you know? And especially when it's a slow progression to just like, oh, you know, this is getting a little bit harder and harder and the pressure's getting deeper and deeper. And it's, you know, you don't almost realize where you are until you're out.
So true. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, it's all, it's just, it takes time, but so true.
Yeah. Takes time. So you talked a little bit about, you know, looking inward and taking care of yourself and, you know, owning that this is a selfish sport. Can you talk a little bit, like if you are helping someone, you know, being a mentor to someone who's looking to like, hey, I need to know where to take care of myself and I don't know where to start. Like, what did that look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, everything, our sport is so mental, right? Like it's just everything, how we operate comes from here. Fitness, it gets you so far, but we know good and well, a lot of times the most fit person doesn't win a race or it doesn't have the long career, that sort of thing. And so for me, I think the biggest thing was finding somebody I could talk to that wouldn't judge me or where I felt like I was being judged in a running setting. And that's hard to do when your whole life revolves around running. It's like all my friends, all my friends' friends, like anybody I went to had some association with me and my running. And I just didn't want that. And so the big thing for me was finding somebody to talk to, a therapist that had no connection to running at all, but that I jived with. And that's hard to do when, you know, he's not a runner. It's like, not many of my friends are not running. And so yeah. What do I talk about? But I think seeing somebody talking through it. And the biggest thing is just like allowing yourself to just have a little bit of grace. Like I don't know. My biggest issue with myself was I was so hard on myself over the last few years. And I still am. Like, that's just, I think that comes with the territory of wanting to be a good athlete. But is like, if I had a bad race, I dwelled on it for 24, 48 hours. And then I immediately just started like talking down on myself mentally. It was like, oh, maybe I'm too old. Maybe I'm not, you know, as good as I once was or whatever. Like, all these young guys are coming in and this and that. And so I think just being able to like look in the mirror and be like, no, you're the same human being. It's just the gears in the brain are not working like you want them to, and you need to fix that. And so, my therapist is actually a mindfulness coach. It's not even like a full blown therapist. And I think just seeing him and working on little exercises and things like that has helped tremendously with, where my head goes, like, you know, in a race or in training now. I mean, so many different things, and it's very dependent on each individual, I would say, and, you know, kind of with what they're going through. But having somebody to just talk through it all with is huge.
Yeah. And, you know, was some of these mindset changes, like, it's easier said than done. You know, you can be like, I'm not going to be so hard on myself anymore. But it's like, you know, when it's second nature to just beat yourself up, that's a really hard cycle to get out of. Could you share some of the tools that maybe you've learned? Just like, you know, maybe one tool that you've learned that helps you get out of that, you know, spiraling mindset.
Yeah. So a big thing for me is growing up and as an adult, I've always kind of been the person that, I'm always there, like trying to be there for others or always saying yes, or always like, I feel like everything I do, I have to perform in a way to make that person happy or make them think of me in a certain way. And so a big part of, for me, was getting out of that situation. And so that bleeds over into running, that bleeds over into relationships. Literally, I couldn't even go to the grocery store without being almost like a chameleon in talking to the checkout person the way I thought they wanted to be talked to. You know, I couldn't just be myself. And so much of like, once I kind of was figuring that out and figured out that I just have to like really lean into who I am. And if there's something I don't want to do or I don't like think about it for a second and think about what the consequences of saying no are or saying yes is, and then make the decision. But more times than not, like what I want to do and the way I feel and the way I like want to talk to people or show up in people's lives, has been in a good way, in a positive way, rather than the way I like when I am thinking about how people want me to show up in their lives, if that makes sense at all.
100%. So, no, I think like we struggle with a lot of the same issues is what I'm hearing right now. And from my own experience and from what I'm hearing about that weight that you felt with Nike, I imagine that just like that took on a whole new level when trying to make a sponsor happy, and how, you know, when you drop out of a race or you underperform, how like, you know, that's a whole new element of that weight of just like, oh my gosh, I didn't show up in the way that my sponsor expected me to. This is somewhere where I can't be a chameleon and just show up in the way that they think that they want me to, or that I think that they want me to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a freaking tricky thing. That's why I put off hip surgery for so long. You know, yeah. I was just stressed about my sponsors, you know? I actually didn't even tell them for years because I was like that I was injured because I was like, man, I want them to still perceive me as the elite athlete that I know I am in my heart, but that I'm not living up to.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what it is it's stress. And so when you're living in a way that you don't naturally or that you naturally aren't, or you don't want to be, it adds stress. And that's another thing, is combating the stress, because I can't just flip the switch and be that way all like be the way I know I need to be all the time. It takes work. And so, yeah, another thing is like meditations or like just relaxing, just shutting off the brain, things like that have been really helpful. Just leaning into the things that I've always enjoyed and liked, but I felt like I couldn't be that certain way or that person. Just kind of getting rid of that feeling has been huge.
Yeah, that's really cool. Where does coaching play in all of this now? I know you took a step back from coaching for a little while. I think that you're coaching now, and I've seen some of your athletes have some really great success. How do you balance, you know, you making sure you take care of you? And as someone like myself as a coach, sometimes, you know, I pour so much into my athletes that because I love them and I love it, that I am just totaled at the end of each day. And I've gone back and forth too. It's like, maybe I shouldn't coach anymore. Maybe I should just run. But, you know, it is something that I love, and it is, you know, a big part of my income. Where, you know, what type of relationship do you have with coaching and your athletes now? And how do you strike that balance? Because what you're doing is clearly working.
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, I think the biggest, I love coaching. Like, it's something I thoroughly enjoy. It's like, some people love doing puzzles, and I look at coaching sometimes as like doing a puzzle, where it's just like, you know, moving the pieces and putting them together, and then reaping the rewards of like seeing athletes have a good day and the smile across their face, or like talking to athletes who had a terrible day and like telling them like, hey, like, I've been there. I know exactly how you're feeling, because a lot of times when you have those bad days, it's hard to think that like other people have experienced that same emotion and feeling before in that way. And it's like, we've been there, we've done it. Like, and I get just as much enjoyment out of like having those conversations with athletes after races as I do when athletes are having success. But yeah, a lot of it has come, like, it came down to when I came back to coaching after having a little bit of a hiatus, was I restructured everything, and I restructured it in a way that I knew I could give the athletes what they needed and they deserved. But I could also live the type of life I knew I needed to, like, focus on training and focus on life at home and, you know, do all those things. And so, a lot of it was, I brought the athlete roster down, quite a bit. I tried figuring out like how many athletes do I need to have where I can, have like, you know, like live comfortably essentially. Cause you know, we're not making a killing running. And so, I figured out that number, and I figured out, okay, can I coach that many athletes the way I want to coach and it not be super stressful? And then, so I ended up having to change that number a little bit and came to a number and, decided not to go over that number, you know, and till inflation hits and I got to charge more or either take on more athletes. But and then I started using more of a like a coaching platform where everything was just under one umbrella. And so that took a lot of stress where I wasn't having to go through Strava and looking through Garmin Connect, all these different things. I was just seeing all the data in one space. And it was for me, maybe I have ADHD, I don't know. But for me, it was just like, oh, this is so great. Like I can just click on one profile and everybody's stuff is, right there. And so
I think that's so much better. Yeah. I was doing spreadsheets for a little while and switched to Training Peaks maybe 4 years ago or so. And it changed my coaching. Yeah. Are you on Training Peaks too?
I'm using Final Surge right now, but I've used Training Peaks too. Both platforms are great. And so much of it was just like, okay, what kind of coach do you want to be? Like, do you want to just give like positive affirmation every day and tell, like not coach, but like lift people up? Or do you want to like coach and be like not communicate as much, like more or less write schedules and that sort of thing? Or like, do you want to be able to kind of be there for your athlete in any running setting? Like, if they're having a bad day, you're there for them. If they're having a great day, you pump them up and you give the positive affirmation. And then the part that I enjoy the most is riding the training because of, exercise phys background and stuff. And so I think that was a big part of deciding how many athletes I could take on. And once I like was able to coach in the way I wanted to coach and be there, my goal was to be as much like a in-person coach online as I could be, if that makes any sense. The best coaches I've had in my running career have been, like in college or, in person situations. And I wanted to be able to be that way through an online setting. And, it's a little tricky at first, but once I kind of, nailed down the logistics, it's been a lot better and easier.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like, what are some of those logistics? Like, is it scheduling calls or is it just like all access, because every coach is different and the formula is different. And it's like, it's difficult to create boundaries with your athletes while also being there for your athletes in all that setting. Like I kind of in the same way, and I have like an open door policy to my athletes, like, let me know if you need anything anytime, because that's how I can be the best coach to you. But and luckily I have a great group of athletes that understand if I don't reply right away all the time. But it is a tricky balance sometimes.
It is, yeah. Setting those boundaries is really important. I think for me, one thing I always respected from probably the greatest coach I had was my coach at Adams State, Damon Martin. And one thing he kind of allowed was for each athlete to decide how much communication or like autonomy they wanted to have. And because he knows that people operate differently. So that was my big thing. When I start working with athletes, I kind of let them dictate how much communication and time they need and they want. And for some athletes, I don't talk to them at all. Like I go in and I see their training and I look through all the data, and if I need to leave a comment and, tell them, they're running the intervals too hard or they're easy to run too hard or too fast, I do all that. But, some of them, we don't communicate, but they're thriving and that's how they are. And then like, maybe they'll send an email once every few months and we'll do a check-in or something like that. And then I have athletes I talk to every day. So I think having, and that's what they need. Without that, they're not going to thrive. And so I just know, like that's part of having a select number of athletes. I know that some days, there's going to be some athletes probably pushing the boundaries with how much communication they need and that sort of thing. But if they want to hop on a call, they let me know when they want to hop on a call and we'll schedule a time that works for both of us. Email is always kind of open sort of thing. So that, as soon as I see the email, I usually will reply or as soon as I can. So much of it is just like getting to a number that I can handle and knowing that like there could be weeks that are really busy and there could be weeks that are just completely dead, but that's okay. I'm not going to be overwhelmed week after week after week with each athlete. So I think giving the athlete the autonomy to tell me what they need, and I'm willing to give that back.
Yeah, that's huge. Balancing the coaching and running is like, it's you know, you wouldn't think it'd be such a precise formula, but it really
It
is.
is.
You know, you really have to strike the balance of, you know, dealing with everyone else's goals and your own, you know, and really working to hold everyone's goals in super high regard in your life, but be protective of your own goals.
Totally.
So I want to talk about canyons a little bit, and I want to bring all of this,
Yeah.
you know, this Matt 2.0, and talk about the build to canyons, which has seemed as joyful as all of your races. You know, I follow you on Strava, and most runs are like great day with the Boulder Boys, you know, and stuff like that. And I remember seeing your Strava before, and it kind of seemed like you were going through the motions, and I
Yes.
feel like you're super present in this build to canyons. So, can you talk a little bit about that and how you plan to apply some of these learnings to canyons this weekend, and what are you looking for from that race?
It's been an awesome build. I don't know if any build goes exactly as planned. I think actually I've like so originally on January 1st, I was like, okay, the plan is to do Big Alta 50K, Chuckanut 50K, and Gorge 50K, which is all 3 or 4 weeks apart, back to back to back. And then I was gonna go out in June and do Leadville Marathon, and then the following week do Silver Rush 50, and then try and do Leadville 100 in August. So that was like the game plan to begin at the start of the year. I just didn't think I was like ready to compete yet, or I didn't know really mentally if I was ready to compete yet for another golden ticket. Because you and I both know, like, I mean, you have to be in the right headspace to even contemplate getting on the starting line of those races, or there's no point in going. And so after Big Alta, which actually it's funny, Big Alta on paper didn't look like a very good race, but I think it was maybe one of my best. Had I not like blown up a little bit with leg cramping and dehydration over the last like just few miles, it may have been one of my best 50K performances. And the reason I say is because I wasn't really fit. Like I was training, but I did not feel fit. But I felt free mentally, and I was just like, I'm gonna go with Eli Hemming and just run with him until the wheels fall off. And that's what I did. And I was so happy I lasted as long as I did. And so after that, I was like, wow, like competing felt easy. Like I haven't felt easy competing in a long time, where like I had that urge to like push and drive and race somebody. Like I haven't felt that way since 2019. Like just have not felt that way. And so after that, I was like, man, like maybe I should be like trying to get back into Western States, or at least give myself a shot. And so thought about it a little bit more, and Chuckanut was coming up, and I was like, I'll email Canyons and see. And obviously that was really hard to get in, but finally was let in. And Chuckanut went really well for me. I got to race another world-class athlete there. I was like, this is a perfect build. And so dropped down and did the 30K at Gorge. With the idea of like kind of just giving it my all at Canyons. And the decision to do it was like one I was kind of grappling with for a while, because golden ticket races are they're special. They're like, you love them and you hate them, you know? It's like, I'm so stoked to be lining up and like racing so many good guys and chasing the ticket. But it's also like, it comes with so much stress, so much like questioning yourself and fitness. Like, I can be so clear mentally right now. And this week has just been like one of those weeks where I'm just like, come on, Matt, get back to the way you were last week. Like, nothing's different. You're just racing a little further. You know, you're racing a few more better people, that sort of thing. And so, I think that the biggest thing I've come to realize is whatever the outcome is of Canyons, I'm gonna be happy. Like, if I don't get into States, yeah, bummer. But like, there's some races I really want to do, and I want to go after. And the fact of the matter is I'm enjoying racing again. So like, the fact that I can still line up after Canyons will be awesome, and that'll be a win. And I'm stoked. The icing on the top is if I get the golden ticket. And it's not going to be one of those things that, like, if it doesn't happen, it's going to break me and ruin the rest of my season. Or if I have a bad day, like, I'm going to spiral again. I just can't see that happening. Like, I'm just at a place where it, like, nobody cares about this, but I do care about this and I'm enjoying it, but I also really don't care about it at the same time. It's just like, it's just fun now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm going into it with, is like, I just want to go compete and see what can happen, and not have any regrets for at least not giving it a shot to get back on that starting line at States. And then we'll go from there. Like, whatever happens, happens. And yeah, great. I think getting a golden ticket would be awesome, because it would help with potential sponsorships and, you know, making a little bit of extra money and that sort of thing. But if not, like, fine. I'm doing just fine right now without it too. And maybe I'll go to Leadville or go race something like OCC. We'll see. I'm going to just see how I feel after it, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. Golden ticket races are so tricky too, because, you know, the reason I was thinking about like doing canyons and just kind of showing up and doing it, knowing that I am not as fit as I would like to be. And, you know, I like push myself too quickly coming back from surgery. And so I've had like big setbacks this fall leading up to Black Canyons, you know, like, you know, one great month, like six weeks with like almost nothing. And so, and that's just from like being impatient, feeling that pressure to perform for sponsors. And so when I was thinking about Canyons, I was like, okay, I could just go out and race this. But the thing is like the like maybe of the golden ticket is makes it really hard to just go out and race, especially when like the rest of your season might hinge on the unlikelihood of you maybe getting a golden ticket. And then, you know, and I'm someone who like, you know, since I've had so many injuries, I like to pick my races carefully. And so I ultimately just decided like, okay, I don't want to just show up and do it. I want to like plan and show up fit. But it is one of those things that like you do have to kind of separate process goals and outcome goals. And like that process goal, the only outcome goal can be like racing hard, you know, because otherwise you're going to kill yourself at a golden ticket race and not have any fun and beat yourself up after. Because, you know, the reality is there's like, what, two or three tickets? And the field is deep every year. So it's, you know, unlikely, but so much can hinge on it.
Yeah, so true. And you nailed it perfectly. That's what it boils down to, is like, there is a lot riding on it, but I think the biggest thing for me is just being okay with like, if the outcome isn't a golden ticket, will I be okay? And with the idea of signing up with the race, it was like, you're going there and you have to give it everything, or else like don't go. Like, there's no point in going to a race like that, because you're just gonna leave frustrated and possibly injured, or, you know, we've both done it before. It's like, we've both run golden ticket races and we shouldn't have run it, and you know, we've learned from it. So it's hard probably for anybody like that hasn't experienced that to really deeply understand what that feels like and what that is. But I think you have to just be in the best place mentally before and physically before even lining up for a race like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad that you found yourself. I'm glad that you were patient with yourself and it wasn't originally on the plan. Idiotically, it was on my plan when I was still on crutches. So stupid. I was like, I am going to race Canyons. And they're like, you know, it takes you 18 months to fully be 100%. And I was like, not for me. I'm a professional runner. And lo and behold, it's about 18 months until I've been fully recovered. It's so cool that you have been patient. Yeah. I'm starting to finally feel that seed of self-belief that like I've felt. And it's, you know, it comes in flashes, and I'm sure you know that. And it comes, you know, sometimes not at all. And sometimes like I'm overcome by my own self-belief. Mm-hmm. But the thing is like, just like you, I didn't enjoy the process for years. And like you, I wasn't excited to compete. And at Black Canyons, you know, I showed up and I decided to line up because I made that goal when I was still on crutches. So I was like, I have to do it and I want to follow through. But I knew I wasn't fit. And that was a really hard place to be, to go into that and just like leave the ego at the door and be like, Spotify, and like not just also that, like not care about the sponsor stuff. Just be like, this is for me. I'm less than a year out from a major surgery. And thank God for Carson for constantly reminding me, like, I didn't want him to talk to the doctor when I got, I was like, I'm going to do it myself. Like, don't worry. Because I, and like, he came in after because I didn't want him to hear the recovery. So he wouldn't stop me from coming back too fast, you know, which is like so crazy. And I'm, thank God he like didn't listen to me. And he was like, no, you idiot. I'm coming in. And, but you know, I had to do that, but, I forget what I was saying. Other than I'm really happy to see that you've been on this trajectory, and it's super inspiring.
Yeah. So, thanks.
You know, when it gets hard in canyons, and like maybe you're facing some of your demons, because for me, like sometimes in a hard workout or a hard race, that's when some of my demons come to stare me down. What are you going to tell yourself to get you out of that?
Yeah, I think. It's crazy. I thought about that so much this week, because I haven't had that. So like, even at, Big Alta, when I like felt like really bad and the cramping started, I mentally never got to a place where I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing this. I want to drop out. Where almost every time that happens in a race, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, it's like, okay, you go through every scenario of like, what can I say that will be a good excuse to drop out? Like that's just what we do. And it's like, okay, like how bad is this? Like, is it good enough to drop out? Yeah, that'll be good enough. I'll tell everybody that's why. Or like, you know, and it got to the point where I was doing that so much when I was racing all last year, that at Javelina, I had no excuses of why to drop out. And I sat down in a chair at the aid station. I was like, I just don't want to be here. That was it. There was nothing else. And when I realized that, I was like, wow, something has got to change with me because I don't enjoy this right now. And I don't want that. Like, you know, and so
yeah.
I haven't had that feeling this year. And I think a lot of that is due to like me just enjoying what I'm doing, enjoying being out there. So I think if things do get hard and I do get to that place at Canyons, I have to like just remind myself, like, I'm, you know, I'm out on these amazing trails where I've had great races before. And like, at the end of the day, it's a race. Like, if it's not my day, it's not my day. Like, get to the finish line. As long as you're healthy, get to the finish line, and you'll have a good day in, you know, later. Because that's the thing, is like, we've had bad days, and then guess what? We come back and we have awesome races. It doesn't mean like you're just going to have bad days for the rest of your career. So I think remembering that, and remembering like, well, if this isn't a good day, and if, you know, these feelings just last until the finish line, so be it. Like, maybe in a month I'll get back on another starting line, or 2 months and I'll have the race of my life. Maybe not, but there's the chance I will. And so that, I think, is going to be something that's going to kind of keep me going and keep me happy and motivated.
Yeah, that's such a stark difference between October and April. Like, in the time of our career, like, that's not that much time. And it's pretty amazing that you got that, you know, you had that complete 180 from not, and I have been there, you know. And for me, I've been injured so much where I like literally couldn't make it to a start line. But then it, like, the line is thin between like not, like, physically not being able to make it to a finish line and not wanting to make it to a finish line. So it's like easy to, or it's hard to distinguish sometimes. And a lot of that time, like, I physically couldn't, but there's been some times where I've been like, you know, I'm right there with you, where I just did not want to be there. And I've dreaded like the race the whole time, you know? And you know, and you probably have alluded to that right now, but like, what do you think changed, you know? Because, you know, you talk about, you know, all the things we've talked about, it's, you know, and I'm sure it's a lot of that, but it's such a 180 that it's, you know, I just, you know, from my own understanding to comprehend like what changed, like, because it's inspiring. And I think a lot of athletes go through that, and a lot of athletes like just want to remember what it's like to love racing again.
Yeah. I think, for me, this may not pertain to a lot of people, but for me, since I've always run for a team, or I've been paid to do this. So like, I've been running for something bigger than just myself. Like, you know, when you're in college, you're running for a team and you're doing your darnest to perform well for them. When you're running sponsored, there's the pressure to like do well for that brand and show up and try and keep a contract because we need the money, you know? And so when that was gone and I found myself still out there doing it, it was just like, oh, like it is just running. Like, none of this pressure or anything needs to be here. It's like one leg in front of the other. I'm breathing hard. Like, you know, yeah. My mind's everywhere. Like, it is, I'm just running, regardless of if I'm running for somebody or running for myself. Like, I'm literally just trying to cover this trail as fast as I can. And when I like fully just grasped that and realized that, it was just like, and realize I don't have to be out here. Like, nobody's telling me I have to be here. But here I am. And so when I like, when that sunk in, I remember it like so clearly. It sunk in. I was on a run. It was either like right before Christmas or right after Christmas when I was back home in Texas. And I was on a run when that kind of sunk in. And I was just like running on trails that I grew up running on and stuff. And I was just like, wow, like it was like the first feeling of not being sponsored and realizing like, here I am still like doing this. And so that means something to me. And so, I don't know, it was just freeing. It was like kind of being like woken up. I don't know how to describe it, yeah. But it was just like, it's just running. So I think yeah. That plays a huge role in you know, where the mental part of it all is.
That's huge. And how do you plan to preserve that when you inevitably find yourself running for a shoe company again?
Yeah, I think, you know, shoe companies, when they sign athletes, they sign them largely because they are performing well and they have a great online presence and other things. But I got signed when I was enjoying running and doing it for myself. Like, it, you know, there was a very short period of time that I wasn't sponsored, but I was like getting free gear and that sort of thing. And I was just kind of being myself and running because I enjoyed it. And I think that like, I just need to keep reminding myself of that. Like, that's why they signed me. It was because I was like running well and enjoying myself. And you know, like, there can be all the pressure in the world, but like, they're not controlling any of it. So it's like, if I have a bad day, like, well, guess what? I'm human. Awesome. Like, use that for your sponsorship. Like, you know, I don't know. It's not like I need to put an expectation on myself that every single day I go out, I have to be a certain person to please somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, that was part of my like whole process, was like, do it for myself and be me and be a little selfish. And usually when I do that, the outcome is what I had always hoped for, not when I like am trying to be somebody I'm not, then the outcome gets all messy. And so I think just keep reminding myself of being like, you know, true to who I am and sticking to that throughout the rest of this. And I think the right company will really appreciate that. And I think will lead hopefully to a really great partnership. And if not, like, you know, so what? I'm still doing this. I love it. It's great. But So.
That's really amazing. And honestly, as an athlete, again, you know, having had a very similar path as you, I'm seeing a lot that I can learn from this, and like a lot that everybody can learn from this. Like, no matter if you're running for, like at a professional level or an amateur level, like I have athletes all the time that get like so attached to outcome goals still that it's defining, and you know, and I see them struggle with this outcome goal where it becomes like the pressure of a sponsorship or doing it for someone else. And then they cannot, even if they're fitter than their, you know, their outcome goal, they can't achieve it because it's, they put so much pressure on it. They're carrying the baggage just like you. So I think everybody can learn from that. It's like, you're going to run your best when you're only running for yourself.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's wild how that, like, every part of life is like that. Like, relationships, if you're trying to force it in a relationship, you know, the relationship's not, it's not going to be great. Like there's going to be a lot of turbulence, but if you're just yourself and you're the person that your partner fell in love with and vice versa, then like things are going to probably be pretty good for the most part. Like, so I think, you know, just kind of really leaning into just being like who you are, true to yourself, and it's just running. It's just running. It's literally just running. Like we did it when we were children on a playground. Like no different now. We're just going through the woods. So
totally.
So big and grand and all these things attached to it. But here we are.
Yeah. I think that's something that's been really powerful for me is being back with someone that I knew, you know, before I was a professional runner. Like I was still very good then, but you know, Carson and I used to like go run in the mountains, like barefoot just because it was fun, you know? And we lived in, you lived on the Big Island. We lived in Waimea and like would run those mountains back. Were you ever in Pololu Valley?
Oh yeah, for sure.
We ran that trail all the way out barefoot when we were in high school together because we started and it was all muddy, we were like down at the beach and we started running because it felt good and we were out for like hours, you know? So it's cool to have a touchstone of like, oh yeah, like I did this before it was my job because it was fun.
Yeah.
We're running out of time here, but I put out on my Instagram that I was interviewing today and the community to ask questions. And I should do that for every podcast because I got loaded with questions, but I picked out a couple that are just, you know, are things that, you know, they're repeating questions. So one of them was, how do you apply the training and racing on the track to your ultra running?
Oh yeah, that's a great question. I've always just kind of assumed like fitness is fitness. They are two totally different sports, but it's also just running like we talked about all this time. And so I think when I transitioned from track and road running to trails, I just realized it felt new and I was going to have to learn a whole new skill set. And the only thing I could apply to it was the fact that one foot was in front of the other. Other than that, it was a learning curve for sure. It took me a few years before I nailed it. And the reason I was able to get, you know, why I had somewhat success right when I got in is because I was really fit from being on the track and the roads and had a background of running consistently for, I don't know, 20 years, you know? And so, I think that just having that huge base and, you know, when you're training for that long, that's going to carry over to whatever type of endurance exercise you do. It's just, then trying to learn the techniques of that new sport, whether it's cycling or trail running or swimming, you know? So, I don't really know if I applied much of it other than like, just, you know, still enjoying it and having fun and putting one foot in front of the other.
That's transition. Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think something for me, the only thing that's really been applied, it's like practicing those acute but intense bouts of extreme pain in track workouts has helped me with my pain threshold in general. Like I can handle the longer periods of discomfort where it's maybe not quite as intense, but it lasts forever much better when I am calloused to the short bouts of intense pain. I always, like, even when I'm trail running or like about to do a 100-mile race, like I love doing, you know, VO2 max workouts, like in the middle of my ultra block, just as that quick reminder, you know?
Oh, that's so interesting. So, I mean, not to go on a tangent, for me, like that's been the hardest part of trail running for me is like the death by 1,000 needles rather than just like the big, like swings of the baseball bat to the head. Like I live for that on the track, like that, like acute, just like you're seeing God and everything else, like in for like 3 minutes and then you're done, you throw up and on to the next thing. It's like in trail running, it's just, like, it's been so hard for me to embrace, that like grind and feeling of just like suffering all day long. But the more I'm doing it, the more I'm like, It's kind of sick. You start to enjoy it and you crave it. So here
yeah,
we are.
Right. And it's just like on the track, like I do still crave that like intense, like how close to the fire can you get?
Totally.
And,
yeah.
And honestly, like before I'm just able to start coping with some of those faster workouts. I yeah. literally until maybe January, if I like any workout would put me out for several days.
Right.
And so I was just because I was still recovering, you know, and I was pushing myself too fast. And so just now doing some of the short, fast stuff, it's, you know, it feels like home. It's like, I know the assignment, you know, I know right. exactly what to do here, where it is much harder to learn how to do those extended bouts of suffering. But I think, you know, starting with the acute suffering and then like drawing it out longer and longer is a helpful way to do that.
Totally.
Okay. So what are your biggest tips as a coach for if you're someone, we got a bunch of like training questions. So like for a new athlete who like, what are three big tips that you give for someone training for their first ultra? This person, one person was saying stage race. I know they change, but I think they're, you know, it's interchangeable.
Yeah. I think the big thing is being able to get volume up, like just getting out and running a decent amount in a week. I think people really underestimate how big your aerobic system needs to be able to enjoy these ultras somewhat comfortable. They're not ever going to be comfortable, but like be able to enjoy them and get through them without like having to DNF right away. I think so many people will watch videos online and like sign up for a race and think like, oh, this is going to be great. And then they get out there and the reality sets in at hour two, like, oh, this is awful. And it's because a lot of people haven't trained to be able to withstand the amount of, you know, aerobic volume they need to complete a race that's going to take longer than, you know, 4 or 5 hours. And especially a stage race, which is going to be multiple days. So I think, and that doesn't mean the intensity needs to be crazy. I think I would like rather an athlete go out and start getting their volume up and getting to a sustainable high volume at a slower pace before you start introducing workouts. And then when you do introduce workouts, do workouts that are going to be fun for you. So like I'm a big believer when athletes are first getting started to do a lot of like free fartlek running, or, you know, where you're not even thinking about running 3 minutes on or 2 minutes off. It's like you go out on a trail or a road or whatever your training grounds are. And after warming up for a little bit, decide like, okay, I'm going to run decently fast to that tree I see way off in the distance. And then I'm going to run slow until I go past that mailbox I see off in the distance. And then I'm going to run fast again and just do that for 20 or 30 minutes. And taking away the structure and like having your brain focus on things in the distance or efforts that you want to play around with, it makes it way more enjoyable and way easier to kind of get that fitness. And I have athletes doing that a lot when we're getting back into training blocks after a race, or new athletes, you know, doing their first ultra or something like that. So I think those are two really big things. And then like finding a community around you, like that enjoys the same thing. And they don't even have to necessarily be training for the same thing, but like going to group runs at running stores, or just like going to a coffee shop and hanging out. This is a funny story. I have an athlete who she just moved and doesn't have a running community. And she said she was at the coffee shop sitting there and she was just people watching, had her computer up like she was working, and she was people watching, drinking her chai tea. And she saw somebody had one of those like 50K stickers on their computer. And so she went over to the lady and asked her like what 50K she ran, and they got to talking, and now they're training buddies. And so, you know, things like that, finding a community is going to be so important. Having like-minded goals and things like that to keep you motivated and keep it fun is, I think, nothing beats that. So I would do that before you even start trying to up your volume or do workouts or anything like that.
Yeah. Find a buddy. I think that I agree. That's like the biggest thing is just find someone to keep it fun, even when it's hard,
totally.
And to commiserate when it is really hard.
Yes. That's even more fun.
Yeah, I know, right? Because there's something special about doing something really hard with people. It forges a different type of friendship.
Well, I a good example, Amanda Basham and I both at UTMB this year just had the worst days, and we find ourselves out in the middle of, the loop at UTMB, just like trying to drop out any way we could do to anything we could do to drop out of the race. And then we decided, well, we'll suffer together, and we're friends. We both live here in Boulder, and so it was really special to share like 29 hours of run walking with a buddy like that on such an epic race, and it made the experience so much better than I think otherwise. But yeah,
And then
it's
you like learn something totally new
yeah.
about those people. Like I remember it at your Ultra Trail, a similar thing happened to me with just some guy. And it was my first European race. I needed the it was back when the stone system. So I had like needed to do it before I to get into UTMB that year. And so I had to finish. And it was like and I like knew nothing. So I like didn't bring enough gels. I was planning for like a US 100K and didn't realize like how much
many
more
hours?
energy you need. Yeah, and how many hours, like 10 miles is not 10 miles there. Even coming from Colorado. And I just ended up doing the race basically with this guy, and we still keep in touch.
That's
It's
cool.
because we spent like 10 hours together, and it was a storm year, so like the race actually got we got pulled off the mountain at like 80K, and yeah, it was like a crazy experience. But all right, before we wrap up, I had some other questions, but maybe I'll start that sooner next time. This is a good learning experience for me. I have a question that I always ask my guests when we're about to hop off, and that's what's something you're proud of that your fans might not know and that you may have never talked about publicly?
Gosh. That's pretty deep. Here we are talking about it, so I don't know if this counts, but I think just kind of overcoming something I've really struggled with, and I haven't overcome it, but I'm, currently in the process of overcoming it or working through it. I don't know if we'll ever get to the final end product, but something that I've struggled with for like the majority of my life. And I think every human being has something that they're dealing with, struggling. I mean, everybody's got something. And I think being able to really lean in to whatever it is that maybe is bothering you or you don't feel like is right, and working on it and taking time to yourself to work on that, is it's fine. We live in a really busy, busy world with a lot of distractions and things. And I think it's important to like be very self-aware and work on things that you're not super happy with or you want changed. And I think that's probably what I'm most proud of, is finally leaning into that. I think for so long you're kind of told to be a certain way, especially maybe our generation. It's like, or maybe not told to be a certain way. You're just existing. And you kind of lose track of what's important in life. And I think, coming to that realization, realizing what's important to me in my life and working on that has been probably what I'm most proud of. And that's going to be a never ending project, but
Yeah, it's working on what's important to you is a never-ending project, but also like a never-ending gift because the things that are important to you tend to give us the most, and that's why they're most important, There, I for me personally, there's a lot of time where I was just like cut, I slowly start cutting myself off from like all of those things, and it's super isolating, and you don't realize that, you get what you give. And being present in parts of life that are super important to you, even if there's a cost, like that is what life is about.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Cool. Well, Matt, I'm super excited to see you at Canyons this weekend. You truly have a fan in me, and yeah, I'm so impressed with your just with your attitude shift this year, and I really hope to apply a lot of what we've talked about to my own racing in the next couple of years.
Thanks. I appreciate it. And I really appreciate you having me on. It's been good to talk and see you. And hopefully, maybe you have to come over to the island and see you soon, or let me know when you're back in Boulder.
Yeah, I'll be back in Boulder soon, and please come visit. There's honestly really great trails here that are kind of a secret. So
awesome. What island are you on, by the way, right now?
I'm on Oahu right now, yeah. In the north shore of Oahu. Yeah. But Carson and I grew up on the Big Island where you lived for a little while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know you're doing a lot of surfing then, so that's awesome.
Yeah, at least Carson is. I'm doing some. All right, well, thanks for hopping on.
Yeah,
all right.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Talk to you.